guys that have been there for a while, and you knew that you were going to win with them. That said, we can break down the roster real quick because, I mean, offensively, yes, Kittle for sure. You look on the offensive line, they have a pretty solid offensive line this year. You know, McGlinchey's a cornerstone for years to come. Staley's got plenty of years left in him if he wants to. He's still got a couple more years. Laken Tomlinson, I thought, has played well. He's played every snap this season, the only guy on the whole team that's played every snap. Richburg was an expensive signing at center. I'm not totally sold on it, but he's done okay. And then, obviously, Garoppolo is. You would look at the backup quarterbacks, whether Mullins or Beathard, I'm not sure. Dante Pettis is a wide receiver. And then I'm not sure about the other wide receivers, whether Goodwin is going to be here 5 more years down the road. You know, he's had a lot of football in him. Defensively, what really stands out on defense is DeForest Buckner. I mean, I think that guy for sure needs to be paid this offseason, at the latest next offseason, to lock him up for years to come. The rest of that defensive line I'm not so sure about. It's a lot of interchangeable parts where nobody's really done outstanding, but nobody's done terrible. At linebacker, Fred Warner's done okay. He hasn't been spectacular, but he's been steady, which is what you need out of your Mike linebacker, at least. And then in the secondary, you know, Richard Sherman's played really well, but this is a guy at the tail end of his career that, you know, he just talked the other day that he wants to play only a few more years and maybe move to free safety. And I don't know if that would be with the 49ers. I don't think it would be. But they do need some overhaul in the secondary, too. So there are a lot of open positions, I would say, going into the draft and free agency. It's going to be a huge offseason for the 49ers still.
So, Cam, I'm generously putting it at, let's say, the 10 to 12 range. Just to put that in perspective, if you're saying half the roster, let's just say 25. So yep. We're talking about a gap between 10 and 12 and 25, a long way to go. And how much of that do you think you can do in one off season?
Well, I think the other part, JD, is you got to look at it's such a team element, right? And so these guys, the longer they're in a scheme, they get more comfortable with it. So that's why you want the continuity. And if you have a great quarterback that rises everybody's level of play, that obviously helps. So I think they took a step back this year, obviously. A lot of those second-year players did not come through that they were expecting them to. The free agency market did not do well with them. Some of their draft picks are coming along, and that's kind of what this season is about now. And you saw that last night or yesterday. So, you know, it's a 3-win team with 3 games to go. So, obviously, it's been a disastrous year anyway you look at it. But, hey, it's Victory Monday.
Victory Monday. Cam Inman is our guest, covers the Niners for Bay Area News Group. And in that response about keepers, you said quarterback backup-wise, Beathard, Mullins, you're not really sure. So am I correct in interpreting that you don't think either of those guys has distinguished himself enough to say that's my backup for next year? And do you think maybe they head into next season with both of those guys still on the roster?
I think definitely all through the offseason program and through training camp, Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard are on the roster because, you know, Garoppolo is coming off this knee reconstruction, so you're not going to force him into the offseason practices right away. So those two guys are going to have a great battle all spring. And Nick's really, he's shown a lot of moxie in these 5 starts that, you know, C.J. did too. C.J., you know, when your quarterback's greatest asset is being tough, it's like, I want to know more than that. I want to know how great his accuracy is. I want to see how he can, you know, help his teammates succeed. And he went 0-5 this year. Things were in a tailspin, and Mullins kind of has helped pull him out of it. So I think Nick Mullins is ahead of right now, but the Niners have a 3rd-round pick invested in CJ, so they're not going to dismiss that. They like him. He's working hard, and it's going to be something to watch. And then once you get through the exhibition games, if one of these guys lights it up, then, you know, you could for sure say he's a number two. And you can carry 3, but, again, you may need that 3rd spot for other places on the roster. Kind of depends on health.
Cam, Solomon Thomas has played better the last couple of games. He made an impact, especially in the first half yesterday. How has he kind of figured it out? And I know John Lynch praised him within the last week. Is there just a sense of hopefulness that maybe he's starting to find a niche to where he can be more impactful?
Well, I think that's what it is hopefulness. I don't think anybody is down on Solomon in terms of his work ethic or his mentality. Obviously, they want him to be this combustible interior lineman, but they're using him in other spots, and he's gone through some really difficult personal struggles this year, and he's got to get through the year. And he has played better the last couple of games. He's done better against the run. He's always just not quite there in terms of the pass rush. He's just at arm's length away from a quarterback or getting stood up by a lineman. A lot of people are just going to be down on him for always being a number three overall draft pick. There's so much pressure and expectations that come with it. And if you were to say that he was a fifth-round draft pick and George Kittle was a number three overall, you'd say, hey, John Lynch aced the eighth draft. That's exactly what you'd expect. And the draft's a crapshoot because, I mean, right now we're talking about George Kittle possibly being one of the best tight ends in the league, whereas Solomon Thomas was kind of more of a role player.
One of the things that came out of the aftermath of last night's win, Cam, was the Jed York speech in the locker room. And I saw you wrote something about it and tweeted about it. And I guess I would just ask you what you thought that sort of let us and fans into in terms of the relationship Jed has with the actual members of the organization underneath him.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good question because, you know, people wonder about Jed over the years. He's risen through the organization. And he's taken a lot of heat. He hired Shanahan and Lynch. You know, these are my guys. And even though they haven't won a lot of games in 2 years, not nearly enough, the support that they had for him last night in that time, in that speech, he's telling everybody on the team to believe in the coach and GM still. That's a resounding vote of confidence for the stability of an organization that went through so many coaches in the preceding few years, that it was really, it's a galvanized aspect that can't be overlooked. And I think that really, Jed had a lot of powerful words in that speech he gave to the team yesterday under difficult circumstances after his brother's death on Friday. And for him to try to just kind of rally the force, it said a lot about just him and his maturity and just where the state of the organization. I couldn't imagine Jed doing this a couple of years ago when things were in chaos and in free fall. And he has that support system inside the locker room among players, but especially among the regime he put in place just under 2 years ago.
That is the voice of Cam Inman. Follow him on Twitter at Cam Inman and read him in the Bay Area News Group covering the 49ers. Cam, we appreciate the time.
Hey, guys, thank you very much. Have a great week.
I think that's a point really well taken about Jed and also just about organizational stability. I know there's a lot of complaints for obvious reasons when you're, 3-10 now, but stability is good, and you don't have to look much further than the Niners' last 7 years to understand that.
Well, and to me, Jed York just seemed much more comfortable in his own skin than maybe he's been at any point. And, you know, it goes back to giving Shanahan and Lynch the 6-year contracts, I think, and being comfortable with the fact that it's not going to look great in terms of results immediately. And I always think it just as a human being, Jed York has he understands the big picture of life.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. He is
in the greater context of everything going on around the football noise and in that NFL bubble that he also lives in. I think he's got had the life understanding.
I think if you're talking about just NFL owners as people, Jed York is number one with a bullet for me. I don't think it's even close. There are not a lot of good dudes.
It's just the football side that
it's been
we've all wondered about, and he hasn't had the patience at certain times. He's had maybe too much patience in other weird times.
He's made mistakes,
up. There's a sense that maybe he's starting to figure out the football part of it a little bit more.
Yeah, and hopefully this is the beginning of a nice long stretch of good football for the 49ers. In a broader sense, the Warriors, of course, already in a heck of a good stretch in the broader sense. In the less broad sense, some struggles in the absence of Steph Curry. Steph back on Friday, was it? Was that his first game back? No, it was earlier in the week, huh? It was like a week before that. Draymond.
Yeah.
returns.
Previous Saturday.
The previous
December
weekend.
1st. They all run together. It's okay.
I wake up at 5 a.m. most days. I'm on the air at 5 a.m. I can't keep track of time, JD.
Nobody's judging you.
It was
December 1st. He's played four games.
I'm sleeping.
That's okay.
2 hours at a time here and there. I do know Draymond is back tonight.
Noted. Great. We'll see y'all soon.
We talk about that next. Matt Kolsky and JD in for Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Stein, Metz, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, it's building. It's building like a, I don't know, it's building really well.
The ever-eloquent Klay Thompson.
Klaytheism, the movement that has taken the NBA by storm.
That's right, Klaytheism. I don't know if you know, I'm an avid Klaytheist.
As am I. He never stops delivering gems.
It's fantastic. And I think people have gotten to the point where they underrate his game. They ignore improvements he's made. And he's never going to be Steph Curry handling the ball, but he's also not second or third year Klay Thompson handling the ball. And the guy just impacts the game in so many ways. Speaking of which, a man who impacts the game in pretty much every way, but scoring back on the floor tonight, finally, as Draymond Green makes his return. It was pointed out to me in the break, JD, and it had kind of slipped my mind that Draymond has not been on the floor since the little Clippers KD dust up.
One time.
Yeah. See, now, I asked that, but I was told emphatically no.
He played in Houston.
See, Albie.
He played in Houston, and
that was the
night that we were all bowling.
And then they got killed.
That was the night that we were all
no, but I remembered that
as a squad here at 95.7 The Game.
I messed
we were
that
all
up.
Bowling.
That's my fault.
Yep.
And
hold
but
on, wait.
Then
I
it
have
was,
something for
then
this.
Then it was nope. Got to shut him down.
Here we go.
We're gonna have a do-over.
So Draymond has only played one time since the dust up in Los Angeles.
He got suspended for the game against Atlanta,
then
and
he came back
for the game against Houston. That was, if you remember, the shoot around that morning.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? The 15th, I guess, of November. So,
and they got run off the floor
3.5 weeks
game.
Ago. Yeah, and that was the shoot around that morning where they were, you know, talking for the first time as they were walking out to the floor from the locker room at the Toyota Center. And yeah, didn't terrible. They ended up losing all three games in Houston, but after that, or all three games in Texas.
Yeah.
After that, they decided they got to give this toe thing a little bit of a rest. So now, what, 3.5 weeks later?
Yeah, it's been a while.
He's back.
How do you, first of all, do you see anything, any leftovers from the, whatever you want to call it?
I think that's the last box that needs to be checked as far as this stage of the season.
How do you check that box, though?
I think you look at, the Warriors were 10-1 right up until the point where Draymond Green missed the game against Milwaukee back in November at Oracle, and they got blown out, and Stephen Curry got hurt in that game.
Mm-hmm.
They lose that game. It starts an 8-8 stretch where either Curry or Draymond Green or both
missed
those 16 games. And there were a ton of drama things that happened. The game in L.A. is in there. The suspension's in there. The return is in there. Them shutting Draymond down was in there. Curry comes back.
Right.
They had to win some games against some improved but inferior opponents with Durant and Klay Thompson going off. Sacramento, Orlando, mm-hmm. ring a bell there. But I think you add up the 16, and I think you could almost ask the question, did it really cost the Warriors anything over that stretch? They're essentially tied for first in the West. They're 18-9. They're on pace to win 57, 58 games on the season, which is exactly what they were a year ago. If there is any box left unchecked, it's how do those two interact now that they're going to play together on the floor.
So are you playing body language doctor tonight when
I think
you're
everybody
watching
will
the
be.
Game? Yeah.
I think everybody will be.
Yeah.
That's not really my thing, but I think everybody will. I think that isn't going to end between now and whatever the last game of the finals is.
That isn't going to end between now and when Kevin Durant makes his free agency decision in the summer. Because if he ends up leaving, no matter what they look like, people are going to point to that incident as part of the issue. There's no question about it. As far as on the floor and how this affects the basketball team, I think the easiest way to make that point is, like you said, they're still in first place right now by win percentage. And Yes, they're on pace for basically last year, but I expect them to far exceed that pace given them returning to full health.
No, I agree with that. I mean, I look at, what, 11 games to go between now and the end of the calendar year 2018, and there's some decent opponents in that stretch. Minnesota, Toronto, there's a lot of good games in this stretch. Portland a couple of times, the Lakers, the Clippers, they're going to play a lot of good teams. They go to Utah, they go to Portland. But there's an 11-game stretch here where if nobody gets injured and they are able to play with the four All-Stars, I think we could be looking at another 9-2, 10-1 kind of a stretch between now and New Year's, much like what we saw the first 10, 11 games of the year before the injuries and some of the drama popped up. So I'm with you on that. I think this team, it's already kind of started. They had the game in Atlanta, the game in Cleveland, kind of get them on a roll.
It's a nice little run builder
the
there.
The Milwaukee game pushes it back toward, okay, this is what the Warriors look like when they actually want to go get a big game on the road with the defensive intensity kind of leading the way. And now they're coming home, and they're going to have all four. And the games are spaced out. I don't think there's, I think maybe one back-to-back in that whole three-week stretch between now and the end of the year. So it's an opportunity to get on another roll and really separate themselves. And that's why, again, I asked the question, and I'll just ask you, did the last 16 games really cost them anything? And the only thing you might say, if you are the body language conspiracy theorist, is, well, it might have wound up costing them Kevin Durant down the line in July. That's the only box that you could maybe leave half unchecked.
And I would say two things to that. The first is I think that's ridiculous to think that incident. Now, it may be that his overall relationship with Draymond Green is part of what inspires him to leave. If you made me bet, I still don't think he's leaving. Because if I take the man at his word, he says he wants to play basketball in the best basketball situation and he won't find one better than this. All that being said, if he leaves, certainly there will be speculation, and some of it might be reasonable, that Draymond was part of the reason why. But by no means can you convince me that it was this incident. Because this incident is not out of character. This incident is who Draymond is, and I think we've seen them get in much less dramatic little squabbles a lot. And in those other cases, virtually every time, they came out afterwards and said, look, we're competitive guys. We're, yeah, we get into it every now and then, but it's all for the betterment of the team. And in this case, feelings were hurt a little more than that. But yeah, it's still who Draymond is.
It is. I also think, though, there's an element, and I agree with you in the sense that it wouldn't just be one incident or this stretch or whatever. That incident could wind up being the final straw, though. Because I do think Kevin Durant... And look, I'm of the belief that I thought going into the year he's probably going to leave. I still, if you say, JD, do you think he stays or goes? I still would lean he's probably going to leave, though I don't believe he's fully made up the decision.
I think that's the biggest thing.
I don't think he's made up his mind.
I don't think he has either.
At all. I think he probably leans for lean. But to me, when you come to the Warriors, you know what you're getting into with respect to Draymond Green, as you've alluded to.
Yeah.
This is who Draymond Green is. But I also think when you deal with a day in and day out,
oh yeah,
you may reach a point, and I'm not saying Durant has or hasn't, but you may reach a point where you're like, you know what, I don't need this.
Yeah, but that's kind of my point.
I've got my rings, I don't need this, and then on top of what may have already been building up, it's the deal in L.A. and everything said after that and the apologies. Like, nobody knows, but it's plausible to believe that Kevin Durant looks at it and he's like, man, you know what? I thought it was going to be crazy, but it's even crazier than I thought. That's a negative box in terms of a positive box when it comes down to his ultimate checklist. Do I stay or do I go?
Of course. Like I said, I think Draymond very well may end up being a negative box in some ways for Kevin Durant. But here's what I'm saying is 27 games in, that means, quick math, 55 to go, right? Is that good? I did that right. 55 games remaining. Ideally, 55 times, at least 50 times, Kevin Durant and Draymond Green are on the floor together in games. Lord knows how many times in practices, walkthroughs, planes, whatever. If Draymond was going to drive him away, he was going to drive him away somehow over the course of the year with all the time they're spending together. It wasn't about one weird night in L.A.
Sure.
for me.
I think that's accurate. It's semantics, but
right.
It's accurate.
Yeah. Let's go to Roy in Martinez for his thoughts on the Draymond Durant situation. What's up, Roy?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Listen, I've been trying to say this all along, but I think Chris Ballard said it best in his long piece in Sports Illustrated today. You have to look at the bigger picture. The bigger picture is that Green and KD are friends. I mean, KD's here because of the phone call that Green made right after they lost that championship. I think that there was a little stress on that moment that everybody is looking at between KD and Green. You remember that Green was out sick, and that was his first game back, and then they had the blow-up. I think there was a little stress there. Unfortunately, it had to be in front of the cameras. But the bigger picture is, to me, is that KD wants to play at least one more year in Golden State to win a championship at Chase. That's his goal. Now, anything after that is up in the air. But I believe that all of this is much ado about nothing, and that we're all focused on the wrong thing. That we should all be focused on winning a championship, and that's what they're focused on. I mean, that's my take. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly I agree with the last thing you said. A championship victory is what they're focused on. And even if, like, there's just no way this is the thing that cost them the championship in my mind. There's just no way. Even if they're not getting along great, they're both too competitive to, like, what do you think? Did KD's going to refuse to pass it to Draymond? Like, they're not going to let this stop that.
Yeah, and I think it's already calmed down enough to where there would have to be another incident
right.
or incidents.
Totally.
You know, but again, during the emotion of the playoffs, if the Warriors are actually significantly challenged by an opponent, which I'm not sure there's an opponent that exists.
I don't see it.
In the Western Conference, at least, to significantly challenge him. The caller mentioned the Chris Ballard piece,
mm-hmm.
and that leads to the Warriors being named the 2018 Sports Illustrated Sports Person of the Year.
So,
which is pretty crazy.
It is. You told me this before the show, and of course, I asked what other teams have managed to do that.
There's only been three others.
Yes, you gave me that list. It is the 1980 men's hockey team, who obviously the big win over Russia, immortalized by Kurt Russell in the film Miracle. The 1999 Women's World Cup soccer team, which you'll remember for Brandi Chastain's bra expose. And the 2004 Red Sox, who, of course, ended the longest, I guess, championship curse in sports, the most ballyhooed championship curse in sports. And even though that's made up stuff, it was enough to get them Sports Person of the Year. I have to say, as nice as it is to win a title, and as much as I think last year's Warriors team accomplished something, that's pretty surprising to me that they're Sports Person of the Year, because other than win a title with a really good team, what did they do?
Yeah, I always try to compare it to recent winners,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just run through some of the recent winners. Last year, it was Jose Altuve and J.J. Watt. Before that, LeBron James. That was the year the Cavaliers won the championship. Serena Williams, Madison Bumgarner in 2014, coming off of his playoff
right.
run and World Series, the way he finished that. Peyton Manning in 2013, LeBron James before that, Coach K, and Pat Summitt in 2011. So it's an interesting thought process and dynamic that goes into, I think, how that's handed out. I think it's part individual accomplishment on the field. I think there's also what maybe that accomplishment meant to a specific community. As well, when you look at Altuve and J.J. Watt and everything that went on in Houston
yep.
in 2017 with the hurricane and everything. So it just I think
there's a lot more to
there's
it.
A lot more to it there. But yeah, there's varying levels.
So what do you think it was about? And I haven't read the article, so it may get into this. But I got to wonder what it was about this team that makes them Sportsmen of the Year again. They may have, I guess, if all you're looking for is the team that played the best sport over that time period, then certainly there's an argument for the Warriors. But is that I guess, is that the only criteria they looked at for this year?
I think it's and I'm kind of skimming through it. Individual excellence is
which
one
certainly
thing.
They have.
And it's individual and collective, really. It's individual, the four star players, and the collective brilliance, obviously, by virtue of the way they play. I'm kind of with you. I'm a little surprised.
I'm going to have to read that article tonight, and maybe we can dig into that a little bit more tomorrow. Let's go to Bobby in Palo Alto right now for his KD Draymond thoughts. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I guess, effectively, I can say that I'm not the biggest Draymond Green fan, but when that initial dust-up happened, I got to say, I thought it was totally KD's fault. I mean, even if he doesn't get the ball immediately, there's no reason to believe that Draymond may not pass it off to him.
He didn't run the floor. That's been my biggest thing the whole time, Bobby. If he'd run the floor, he might have gotten the ball.
Absolutely. So I've always, quote-unquote, blamed KD for that problem. But here's the thing. When KD hit that step-back three in the corner to take it in overtime in Toronto, I turned to my friend and I said, KD just won this argument. It was all Draymond's fault.
If you're going by big jump shots, then KD's going to win a lot of arguments. I'll tell you that much.
For sure.
Let's hear from Marcus in Pinole with some thoughts on the Warriors being named the sports people, I guess, of the year. What's up, Marcus?
What's up, guys? My thing is, I think the championship last year and that team cemented the Warriors, you know, with a back-to-back championship 3 out of 4 years. I think it put them as one of the best teams of all time, and that's why they became Sportsman of the Year. That's really all I have to say.
All right.
Different criteria than the previous team winners.
Yeah.
But that's plausible.
Sure. Frankly, it makes as much sense as anything.
I mean, the 2004 Red Sox ended the curse.
Yeah, even though I think a lot of us will agree that's all nonsense, it's still one of the biggest stories in sports history.
Right, and the way that they did it, too.
Exactly, and the same thing with the other two teams. They're two of the biggest sports stories in the history of sports stories.
Yes.
The Warriors were not that last year.
The Warriors were not that last year.
In fact, they probably underperformed by expectation. Right?
Certainly in the regular season.
In the regular season, absolutely. Absolutely. 510 Texter says, the Warriors as individuals and a team do a ton for the community and donations as well. Didn't Durant win an award for essentially the same thing in 2018? And yeah, that is how guys win service awards. It's not usually how they pick Sportsman of the Year, I don't think.
I believe there is an element of that, though, too. In this, again, I look back at J.J. Watt and Jose Altuve. And everything.
Certainly, yeah.
And
so I think that was involved in that selection. You're right.
Yeah, so I think there is an element of good guys doing great things.
We'll dig into that a little bit and see if we can get to the bottom of it for tomorrow. J.D. and I, here all week, by the way, as Steiny and Guru perform afternoon duties. The other big Warriors story today, because I'm not going to get into the potential Steph moon landing denial, which concerns me, but I'm just gonna put that to the side for right now, because I don't want to.
Him and Kyrie going back and forth.
Basically, it's the same problem every time, as someone goes on someone else's podcast in the NBA and starts talking reckless. And Steph was on the Kent Bazemore Vince Carter podcast and started tossing out moon landing conspiracy theories. But the basketball story I want to throw at you is, officially, DeMarcus Cousins has been assigned to Santa Cruz, and he's not going to play there, at least not yet, but he is going to practice 5-on-5, which is something the Warriors don't do an awful lot of, so he hasn't had a chance.
I would view this as almost the beginning of a training camp.
Okay, so you think we're maybe 2-3 weeks out?
I think it's probably more than that.
Okay.
I would say it's probably 4 weeks if I had to put a number on it.
But you do think early January, you're not thinking like around the All-Star break, you're thinking early January.
I've actually said for a while that I think it's January, whether it's January. I think maybe we did that Warriors This Week show about a month ago.
Sometime in January.
And I think it's January, whether that means it's January 3rd or January 31st.
Okay.
I don't know, but I think it's sometime in January. The fact that they're starting his ramp up now, that leads me to believe that he is about a month away from playing NBA basketball.
I guess the first question to ask here is, are you as excited as I am? Get your boogie on.
Yeah, I mean, DeMarcus Cousins is a terrific player.
He is phenomenal to watch. An
embarrassment of riches.
Whew. Do you think there's an adjustment period bringing him in?
Yes, I do. It's mitigated by the fact that he's so incredibly skilled.
Right.
He can shoot, he can do offensively. He can post up. He can pass. He has shown an ability to get the ball at the wing and drive and be able to, you know, maybe throw up a layup. And even if it doesn't go in, he can get his own rebound and put it back. He kind of, you know, muscles his way through.
He's got everybody. That Chris Webber dribble drive.
He's incredibly skilled.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Warriors fans that haven't really watched him a lot throughout his career are they may actually be a little bit surprised at how skilled he is. Now, how much of that is mitigated by the injury? I mean, it remains to be seen, and the Warriors obviously are playing it as cautiously as they possibly can, you know, considering the fact that they have the luxury to do so.
Well, it's a major injury, obviously, and I think clearly his effectiveness could be limited by the injury, but to your point, his skill level is not going to change. He's still a guy who has all that skill, and so as big men go, you'd have to think he's about as well-suited as anyone to overcome this kind of injury, and also the fact that there's not a lot of pressure on him offensively should help.
Conditioning is a big thing,
yes.
And just where he's at physically, because the Warriors play at a pace that he hasn't played at before. And, I mean, the Pelicans played at a pretty high pace.
Yep.
Last year, and there were times, if you watch them, and I watch a ton of NBA games, there were times where he was basically running three-point line to three-point line.
And that is the next question I was going to ask you, which is, do you think that the Warriors are okay with well, first of all, do you think there's a significant decrease in defensive level anytime he's out there, and do you think the Warriors are going to be okay with that, especially down the stretch of games?
I think there will be. I think they're going to really have to give it. They're going to have to give it a lot of time to see how it works and really see what the strengths and potential weaknesses are. I think this is where the Warriors may have an advantage in something we were talking about earlier, which is that there isn't really that one team out there that can fully take advantage of it. But I think that whether DeMarcus Cousins is going to start, Steve Kerr said that.
Yep.
He's also alluded to the fact that he's going to play somewhat of a David West role as far as the bench unit goes. So there's two things that he said. That leads me to believe, and I've said this a couple of different times, that leads me to believe that he's going to start probably every quarter. He's going to start the game.
Right.
He's going to start
probably
the second half.
Probably play 5 or 6 minutes to start.
And the question will be, does he finish the second and fourth quarters?
Yep.
And I think the Warriors are going to go out of their way to really try to get that five playable in those biggest of situations.
I agree.
And I think Iguodala resting or maybe having a little nagging injury here or there, I think that's going to, you know, there's times where you can give an Iguodala a break as a reason to really try and hammer home how those five can play together. But if there is one question, I do think it would be, does he finish games consistently?
I would agree. And I have been one to defend Boogie's, let's just call them attitude problems, because that's what they've generally been called, because I think he's been in really tough spots and he's a competitive guy. But the real test of his attitude and approach is going to be if he's not playing down the stretch of fourth quarters for the team that's headed to the championship, how does he handle that? Because right now, when he's not playing at all, it's all sunshine and roses, and he seems as happy as we've ever seen him, and everybody loves him, and he loves everybody, and I don't think that's insincere. I believe that. It's not surprising to me that he's a likable guy behind the scenes.
Yeah, you also hear whispers and murmurs that he's itching to get back, and that, you know, he's you know, not exactly loving the patience
right
that the Warriors are laying on him right now as far as the process of working his way back in.
And
now, nothing that's been a major issue, but again, it comes. I think all of the knocks on DeMarcus Cousins, I actually do think come from a good place. I think his
totally
heart
agree.
Is in the right place.
Yeah.
He just doesn't always manifest his emotions and his reactions in a way where it's acceptable.
And look, as I'm a guy who counts both DeMarcus and Draymond Green among my favorite players, which I think says as much about me as anything, because I have a deep understanding of competitive, somewhat emotional people who occasionally behave in ways they later regret because of that competitiveness and emotion. As far as DeMarcus goes, with Draymond, we've seen it in a good situation work great to everyone's advantage. We haven't had the chance really to see that with DeMarcus. It looked to be going well in New Orleans, but he really hasn't had the chance to be in a good situation for long enough to see if he can use those emotions and competitiveness for good. And it is both the most exciting thing about having him here, and I think also, if you're a Warrior fan, one of the most concerning things about having him here is that we won't have the answer to those questions until the end of this year.
Yeah, and this will be the ultimate test.
Yep.
This will be the ultimate test for him moving forward, because if he can't do it here, then everybody that's had something negative to say about it is just going to come out of the woodwork and say, well, if you can't do it here, or if the Warriors don't win a championship.
Oh, man.
And somehow, and you know, there's a little bit of pressure on him. Just, I think, more so in how he acts and carries himself than even how he plays, because I don't think he's going to play enough or get enough touches to really look like the DeMarcus Cousins that we've seen. Like, we're gonna notice it, but he isn't gonna get the raw numbers where you go, wow. That's amazing.
No, we'll see how spry he looks. We'll see what he looks like running the floor. And undoubtedly, we'll see moments of greatness because he is DeMarcus Cousins, after all. But we probably won't get a chance to see if he can carry a team, which he certainly was capable of doing before for stretches, if not into the playoffs. One last thing before we squeeze in a couple of random notes at the end here. Did you catch Draymond's comments about, or when he was asked, do you still believe you can be and want to be defensive player of the year?
Yes.
Do you think it's still possible?
Probably not.
With Kawhi playing the way, unless Kawhi ends up missing as many games as Draymond.
But whatever keeps him motivated.
Absolutely.
If he wants to go after it, then that's going to be a good thing for the Warriors, even if he ends up third or fourth.
Yeah.
I mean, really. Now, I would say it's far more likely than not that he would be able to get it done, though.
That he'd
be able to win it.
Oh,
DeMarcus,
okay.
Or Draymond, not DeMarcus.
All right.
Yeah, I don't think he can win it. But again, if he's going to try to win it, that's going to be nothing but good for the Warriors. I also think he's probably going to end up missing more games.
Yeah, I
hate to say that, but it just, this toe, I feel like, if you're going to play on it for the next 2 months, you might have to take the end of February and early March off and get ready for the playoffs.
And it's not just the toe to me, frankly. It's the last couple years, the nicks and bruises have gotten to Draymond more and more. And I know he's tough, and I know he's in great shape. Best shape of his life, I'm sure.
Would he have been playing the last 3 weeks if it was the playoffs? Yes.
Yes.
He would have been. And
yes,
he will play in the playoffs if it's just this toe.
But he won't be as effective as if he was a little more healthy. And again, like you said, we're not sure this 16-game stretch cost them anything. And I didn't mention this earlier, but one thing I thought of when you say that is that there just isn't last year's Rockets this year. There is no team that, if the Warriors are functioning at full capacity, is an obvious challenger to them, even in the regular season. So pulling away from the pack in the West feels a lot easier than it did a year ago, and rest feels a little more important for a playoff run that your toughest competition may come in the finals.
If the Warriors are healthy for the next 3 weeks, and I mean just the four All-Stars are healthy, the next 3 weeks, I think we're going to look up on January 3rd and the Warriors are going to have a 5-game lead.
Yeah, 5 at least. I would agree
for
with that.
Number one in the Western Conference.
Yeah, yeah. Again, because you look down the list, it's the Thunder, Nuggets, Clippers, Lakers, Grizzlies, Blazers. None of those teams are distinguishing themselves beyond any of the other ones.
And maybe 3 weeks is a little quick.
It might be a little
on that.
Fast,
it might be
by
add
the All-Star
another
break,
week,
certainly.
Because we kind of laid out the 11 games between now and the end of 2018. I think the first handful of games in January, I think they play Houston. They go to Sacramento again. I know they're there this week. They play the Knicks. They got a couple of home games that next second week of the year before they start playing the Lakers and Clippers and go back east. So maybe it's really the next month. If they're healthy for the next month, I think we're going to look up and they're going to have a 5-game lead.
Yeah, I would say at least that. Let's quickly hear from Ryan in Fremont on DeMarcus Cousins, who heads to Santa Cruz for 5-on-5 practice today. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm a Kings fan, unfortunately, and I love watching when DeMarcus, he's so intense, and all that guy wants to do is just play on a winning team. And I'm it makes me want to be a Warriors fan, because when that guy gets on his team and they start winning games, the guy is the biggest beast. I think he's talented as a LeBron James. I know that's a stretch, but the guy's going to be an MVP candidate, and the Warriors are going to really think twice about letting him go next year. And one more thing, Raiders.
Raiders get a win. Congratulations to Ryan. Reggie McKenzie takes a big L getting fired. Yeah, MVP candidate. Sure. Why not?
Why not?
I don't know what to say about that. As far as DeMarcus coming back, he pretty much can't.
Yeah, he can't.
Anything's possible, but if he's coming back, it's because things went really wrong this year.
And it's either things went really wrong, but if things go that wrong, they probably aren't going to want him back.
Or things go so right that he doesn't care about money anymore.
But he'd literally have to say,
I don't care.
I'm going to take the mid-level again with
right.
the raise.
$6.4 million.
Exactly, with the built-in raise that a player would get if he did that again. The only other way, as I've pointed out a couple of times, is if you start talking about multiple stars being renounced or traded.
That's not happening. There's zero. I'll go ahead and go
and
out
on a
limb.
And what I mean by that is, like, it would be Curry and Durant and Cousins.
It might just be Curry and Cousins.
And there'd be no Draymond and no Clay and probably no Iguodala and or Livingston.
You'd have to trade those guys somehow, which would be hard enough, especially Iguodala.
And attach other valuable assets to them.
You tear the entire team down to do that, and that's
so,
not going to happen.
Again, that take a mental picture of what it would have to look like.
Yeah, and you're no longer a good team, so it would be pointless. Quickly, before we get out of here, did you see the news out of Denver?
Flag champ is here!
Nick Young's back in the NBA, everybody!
Desperation. How did the Nuggets go from the greatest story of the early NBA season to that desperate?
But they're still third. Why are they desperate? They're 7-3. They've lost 2 games in a row. Chill.
Well, Gary Harris is out and Paul Millsap's out. I know it's not the same position, but they've got some injuries.
I'd rather reach into the D-League.
They lost to the Hawks G-League. Over the weekend.
I understand. But, the Sixers lost to the Cavs a week ago and they didn't trade Jimmy Butler again. Like, let's just not be ridiculous. Nick Young, I hope he does well, but to bring that into a locker room that you hope to be playoff competitive, it's a little crazy to me. And this really is the peak. The tweet from the Denver Nuggets account, Nick Young has officially joined the squad, #MileHighBasketball. And I know Mile High Basketball is probably always the hashtag, but also, come on, man.
They're fired up about it.
Fired up.
Not only did they do it, but they're really, really happy they did.
Firing up.
Which is interesting.
Fire. I can't help it. Look, if they're excited, I'm excited.
He's not a bad locker room guy. He's just not a very good player.
He's Nick Young. He hurts you on the floor, and he's goofy in the locker room.
He's just goofy, yeah.
He is as goofy.
He's not a bad guy.
He's not a bad guy, no. He's Nick Young.
Just brings a different element.
He's Nick Young, and you usually don't win when he's on your team. The Warriors hopefully can put a win in the column tonight. Draymond Green makes his return, and JD and I make our return tomorrow. Papa and Bonte join you next on 95.7 The Game.